Maine's Political Pulse is made possible by listeners and by Lee Auto Malls. Introducing Lee Plus, a pre-owned vehicle maintenance program. Learn more at leeauto.com.
Welcome to Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Kevin Miller, Maine Public Statehouse correspondent. This week is a special edition of The Pulse. What you're about to hear is a lightly edited version of the live discussion with Maine Calling host Jennifer Rooks, Chief Political Correspondent Steve Missler, and myself.
Steve, let's start by discussing the historic news that former President Trump has been indicted by a New York grand jury. Details are still under seal. What kind of reaction has there been from Maine's congressional delegation?
Well, Jen, I think collectively the response has basically stated the obvious, that the indictment is the beginning of the legal process and that Trump is afforded the same due process under the law as any other American citizen. None of the statements that I've seen have drifted beyond that, and I think that's not surprising. And I think it would be pretty risky for any member to get ahead of themselves in this case, but that's not to say that there aren't members of Congress who are, some Republicans, for example, are going full tilt defending the president, going after the prosecutor in the case, and making all sorts of allegations that will certainly make the former president's supporters happy, but may not be grounded in reality. We haven't seen that from our delegation, but, you know, and I think that tracks, honestly, because none of our members really conduct themselves that way. They tend to, you know, play it more safe and closer to the vest, especially when the details, as you mentioned, in this indictment are also under seal.
Kevin, while the nation was talking in the news about President Trump, you were up late at the State House as the legislature passed what is being called a baseline or continuous budget. Explain this. What is a baseline or continuous budget, and why did they do this now on March 31st or March 30th last night?
Yeah, Jen, so why did they do this? I mean, that's the question that I think a lot of Republicans have been asking for the past week, and they were really hammering last night during their many, many floor speeches on this. Baseline budget essentially maintains the status quo in terms of government functions, so it doesn't add any new programs or new initiatives. And what the Democrats said is that by passing this baseline, or this, they call it a continuing services budget now, they provide some assurances and some stability to towns and school boards that are crafting their own budgets. And it removes the possibility of a government shutdown on July 1st if for some reason the two parties, they can't agree on a budget later on. Democrats say that now that the prospect of a government shutdown is off the table, they can go back and they can work with Republicans over the next coming months to pass additional budget bills that might fund new initiatives or potentially return some of anticipated budget surplus back to Mainers in the form of tax cuts. But as you suggested, that's not the way the budgeting process typically is done here in Maine. They often will push it to mid-June, and then they have to pass it by a two-thirds vote as opposed to a majority vote like they did last night. And Republicans say that by passing a majority budget, basically Democrats sidelined them and ignored their priorities.
Steve, let's follow up on that. Republicans are not happy. Outline their objections.
Yeah, no, they're not, Jen. And there's a few reasons for that. I think the one that they're focusing on is that they were unable to get assurances from Democrats in this continuing services budget that the next spending bill, the one that will be negotiated later this spring, will contain a $200 million income tax cut. They also wanted a study of Maine welfare programs. That was their big ask during these negotiations. Democrats rejected those requests, saying that they don't belong in a baseline budget. The other issue is that by pushing the budget this way, and Kevin alluded to this, Republicans lose a lot of leverage. That's because it essentially neutralizes the threat of a government shutdown. And that's been a key tool for the party that's in the minority, particularly Republicans over the last few years, to extract policies that it wants in budget bills. Now, Republicans say that Democrats had no reason to fear a government shutdown and that they were negotiating in good faith, but that hasn't always been the case in recent years. I mean, we had a government shutdown in 2017. I think that was in a lot of people's minds this year, and certainly in 2021, when Democrats took a nearly identical budget path as they took last night in 2021, they enacted in March, late March, just like now, a continuing services budget. And then they got together with Republicans later on and negotiated a supplemental budget to change the new two-year budget. And they got supermajority support when they did that. And so I think there's some hope from Republicans anyway that that might be a possibility. But the question remains is whether or not they even want to, you know, bother negotiating with the Democrats right now. I mean, there was some talk in 2021 that was going to destroy bipartisan comedy in the state house. That didn't really happen because they ended up coming together on a separate spending package that both parties were able to take credit for.
Kevin, you explained to us what a baseline budget is. So my next question is, how much of the biennial state budget is left to be appropriated? What still needs to be negotiated?
Yeah, so Governor Mills actually put forward a $10.3 billion budget. What they passed last night was $9.8 billion. So there's about $500 million difference in there. What they will now do is they'll go and they'll renegotiate, start negotiations on some of these additional measures that the governor has put forward or that Democrats and Republicans want to see. And both parties definitely have their priorities, and we're going to see a lot of discussion about that over the next couple of months. I think one thing that's important to bring out here is with the baseline budget, there are things in there that were passed in the past few years that are important to both parties and that cost a lot of money. And those are still in there. So, for instance, the state government is still going to be covering 55% of education, K-12 education costs. That's something that Maine voters demanded for years, but only happened until the last budget. The municipal revenue sharing, which is the slice of tax dollars that go back to towns and cities, that will stay constant. They're going to continue to provide free school lunches to K-12 students and free community college tuition to recent college grads. Those are all issues that passed with bipartisan support and cost money. And that's why the budget has grown so much over the past couple of years. So those will continue. But like Steve said, one of the big things that was left out is any kind of tax relief. And this is a historic budget. We're going to be over $10 billion. Republicans say some of that money should be going back to Maine taxpayers. So we're going to see a fight over that. And then progressives will be pushing to give more money to social services and other needs. So this is pretty much round one in budget talks.
Steve, on another topic, I received a full-size flyer in the mail this week from opponents of the proposal to create a new quasi-government electric utility in Maine. I actually went online to double-check and make sure I was right in thinking that if there's a referendum, it's not till November, and I'm right. So that's more than 7 months from now. I can't remember ever receiving political material this early on a potential referendum. What does this say about this particular political battle?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that. And maybe in 2021, there weren't mailers that went out this early, but there was certainly television ads. And I guess that was around the Central Maine Power Corridor referendum in 2021. The advertising in that campaign actually began a full year before the issue went to voters. Now, I'm talking television ads, digital ads, you name it. And part of that was because the referendum was supposed to be held in 2020 originally, if you recall. But the other part was that CMP knew then and knows now that it's not an especially popular company. So these ads that you're getting now, and they're on digital platforms too, follow a similar track as the corridor referendum. This time, however, CMP and Versant, the state's other big utility, are facing a far more existential threat. If approved, the referendum that will be on the ballot in November effectively takes them over. Now, neither CMP nor Versant want that to happen, and they're going to spend millions of dollars preventing it from happening, and they're really just getting started. Their political action committees for these respective groups, including the one that paid for the mailer that you received, are sitting on millions of dollars. And the corridor referendum, as a frame of reference, was a $60 million campaign. That did include spending by supporters of the referendum. And, you know, I would expect that this one will probably come close to, if not eclipse, that amount, just because of the threat that CMP and Versant face in this case. So I think your mailbox will be plenty full between now and November, and certainly messages on digital platforms and television, you're going to get hit with those too. This is just the beginning.
Steve, let me ask you this, though. Is there a chance it could backfire on them? I mean, I have to confess that getting a mailer like that in March was not a positive feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a great question. I'm glad you brought that up because, yes, I think there's definitely a chance that it could backfire. And I think you can make a case that in 2021, that it backfired for CMP and Hydro-Quebec, which was also involved in that campaign. Because for precisely the reason that you just said, people don't want to deal with this stuff this early. They don't even want to think about it. And some of them don't even know that there's a referendum until November. And so, you know, and generally speaking, especially negative advertising, people don't really like it. And it's off-putting in a lot of ways. And so maybe there's some strategy behind this doing it so early. I mean, I think part of it is just that CMP and Versant really need, they feel compelled to fight this because, again, it's an existential threat to them. But I think your point is a really valid one, that it could backfire, especially if they get really negative, you know, and do it very often. And, you know, and right now, the other thing is that the proponents of this utility takeover don't have a lot of money. So it's going to be a very one-sided campaign, at least in the near term. And so I think your point is a very astute one in this case.
Kevin, speaking of this referendum, I understand there is a fight right now over how it will be worded. What's the latest on that?
Yeah, indeed there is. And here's where we get into why I think this referendum is potentially going to be so confusing for voters. Maine's Supreme Court held a hearing yesterday, actually, over the Secretary of State's use of the word quasi-governmental in the wording of the ballot question. State law says these ballot questions, they have to be understandable to voters the first time they read the question. And some of the Supreme Court justices didn't think that the phrase quasi-governmental, in addition to obviously being a mouthful, they didn't think that it's very clear. The people behind the referendum, meanwhile, they want the ballot question to use the phrase a consumer-owned utility. But opponents say that's not accurate either, and they insist that it kind of unfairly paints the initiative in a populist light in order to appeal to voters. And then while all this was going on, we had the Secretary of State's office actually put out new wording yesterday that includes both phrases. But you know, here's the thing, I think this issue is so complex, and there's going to be so much money that's being put into it, like Steve mentioned, and it would alter the electricity landscape in Maine. But I think, you know, if we can't even agree on how to ask the question, I think that's an indication of how difficult it's going to be for Maine voters to be able to parse through the enormous amounts of conflicting messages that both campaigns are going to be sending out in the mailboxes and putting up on the airwaves in the next 7 months. So it's going to be a challenge.
Oh, my. Okay, one more topic before I let you guys go. Earlier this month, Steve, it was an historic moment in Maine. All of the Wabanaki chiefs addressed the legislature in a State of the Tribes address. In very different ways, all made their case for sovereignty and for having the same rights afforded to other tribes across the country. In the weeks since, what has been the reaction from legislators?
Well, I think the reaction, Jen, has been to get to work on legislation that would deliver to the tribe some of what they're asking for, mainly greater self-governance and economic self-determination. That's really the crux of their issues with this 1980 settlement agreement that they argue has held them back compared to other federally recognized tribes. So work on that front is underway. I can't exactly say what the new proposal will look like because it hasn't been released in the form of a bill. But I can say that the tribes have made a concerted effort to bring Republicans along to their cause. Now, that's been missing from previous efforts. And I think they've been relatively successful on that front. House Minority Leader Billy Bob Fockingham has expressed interest in this. And if he can bring along enough Republicans, the tribes might well have a proposal that could get around a veto from Governor Janet Mills should that happen.
And that's what I wanted to ask as well. A follow-up for you, Kevin. Do you believe there's enough support for a sovereignty bill to override a veto? And do you believe that the governor would veto it?
As far as the override vote, I think that's admittedly hard to read right now. As Steve mentioned, you know, the tribes have definitely made a lot of inroads, or they're trying to make inroads with the Republicans. But there were even some Democrats who had concerns about the sovereignty bill in the past legislative session. So it might be a little bit too early to say. I mean, what we've heard from from Representative Faulkingham, who Steve mentioned, is that some of what the tribes are emphasizing here, issues of self-government, that resonates with him and with other Republicans who are big supporters of local control. And the chiefs had a very warm reception and seemed like a lot of lawmakers were paying close attention to what they had to say. As for whether Governor Mills is going to veto it, I think that's another question. We still see municipalities and some of the big businesses here in the state, including the forestry industry, which is very influential. They're raising a lot of concerns with this, both with the Mills administration and with Republicans. And so there are fears about what this could mean for businesses. So I think it's too early to say. It seems pretty clear that the governor probably would not support a sweeping overhaul of the sovereignty laws. But she is signaling that she's willing to work with the tribes again on specific issues.
Thank you both. That was Kevin Miller, Maine Public Radio's State House correspondent, and Steve Missler, Maine Public Radio's chief political and government correspondent.
And that's Maine's Political Pulse for this week. A reminder that the Pulse podcast typically posts on Friday afternoons, with an excerpt broadcast Friday evenings on All Things Considered. You can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And be sure to sign up for our weekly newsletter. Sign up at mainepublic.org/pulse. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.